Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Episode 339 of Real Life Ghost Stories, and I have two spooky stories for you today, and the last story comes from February the 3rd, 2024, and story number one comes from Samantha. I lost my granddad when I was 11. He always loved us kids, and even when he was ill and bedbound, he'd always have a game of frustration or a giant jigsaw set up on the bed for when I'd finish school and go and see him. One night when I was 14, my mum and I were staying over at my grandma's, and I was sleeping in the back bedroom where my granddad had stayed while he was ill. I woke up in the middle of the night and felt like there was someone there with me. I opened my eyes to find the light on, even though I know I turned it off before going to sleep. Confused, I sat up to find my granddad sitting at the bottom of the bed smiling at me. His jigsaw mat lay across the bottom of the bed with a half-completed jigsaw set up. At first I wasn't scared. He was my granddad after all. Same smile and loving look in his eyes. He looked exactly as I remembered him, just healthier. Then he said, "Hi, Sam." And it was his voice. Hearing him seemed to make something click in my head. My granddad couldn't be there. He died 3 years ago in hospital. That's when I got scared. Not because he was sitting on my bed, but because I knew he couldn't be there. I screamed and shot out of bed, running to tell my mum what I had seen. She was a bit confused at first, but asked me what I had seen. I explained what had happened, and that's when I remembered the packet of blue Berkeley cigarettes and the silver lighter that was next to the jigsaw puzzle. I don't think my mum believed me until I mentioned the cigarettes, as there is no way I could have known that my granddad smoked that brand years before I was born. I had only known him to smoke roll-ups and a pipe. She said he just wanted to pop in and say hello and see how I was. But I refused to sleep in that room for the next couple of years. I'm now 38 and have slept in that room on a regular basis while my grandmother was ill, and even lived there for a while between moves, and I haven't seen him since. My grandma passed at the beginning of August 2023, and I was worried that she would come and visit me too, but so far she hasn't. I'd like to think my granddad has warned her against it. The second encounter was earlier this year at the start of January. I was in bed and woke up in the middle of the night to a slight ache in my right side. I turned slightly onto my back and realised there was someone in bed with me. Now, the only people who should be in my house at this time is me and my two kids, who are 10 and 3 and don't usually get into bed with me in the night. I looked down and saw my 3-year-old daughter cuddled up to me, with her hand where I was feeling the ache that was gradually turning into pain. I could only see her from the eyes up, but something looked wrong. I shouted to my son to check if she was in bed, as they share a room. It took a few attempts to get an answer, but he said that she was asleep in her bed. I looked down at what I had assumed was my daughter to find her looking up at me. She looked like my daughter, same blonde hair, same blue eyes, except her mouth was stretched in an evil smile that was much wider than her face should have allowed. As I shouted for my son, she dug her hand into my side and the pain was intense. I could feel her clawed hand piercing my skin. My son came into the room and it was like he couldn't see her. I tried to tell him to turn on the light, but I was having trouble moving. All I could do was try and point to the light while trying to gasp out the word. Finally, after a couple of tries, I managed to shout the word light. As soon as I had finished my shout, I woke up. I was alone in my dark room, and the only noises being my gasping for breath and my pounding heart. I've never had sleep paralysis, but that's what I put it down to at the time, telling myself that the pain that I still felt at the exact same spot was just in my head and left over from the nightmare. As much as I tell myself that is what happened, it's hard for me to fully believe it, as the next morning I found a large bruise in the exact spot that I had had the pain, and it took around a week to disappear. If something was in my house and impersonating my daughter, it hasn't been back since, and I hope it stays that way. I think it's so lovely that your grandfather came back to see you, but also equally terrifying. I'm sure somebody in the afterlife must be like, why do people keep screaming when we send their loved ones back? And this time they were like, you know what? Send him back with a jigsaw. Ease her in. Something they used to do when he was alive. And then they're like, no, still screaming, screaming again. What are we doing wrong? And I would like to think that after your grandmother died, your granddad was like, don't go back. It's a lot of screaming. It's a terrible idea. Don't do it. But besides the fear, it is lovely to think that he came back to see you and to make sure that you were okay. I think it's such a lovely, wholesome, heartwarming thing to think that our loved ones can come back and just see us and keep an eye on us. I do think, however, that we need a big box of fuck off for whatever it was that was impersonating your daughter. Ew. Just ew. Like, even if it was sleep paralysis or a dream or whatever, like, maybe you had that bruise beforehand and you sort of started feeling it in the night. I don't know. Either way, whatever the objective truth is to this story, it's absolutely petrifying. Anything that's doppelganger-y is petrifying, especially when it's something that is mimicking a small, innocent, lovely little child, and then it has this big, horrible, evil grin. Ew, no.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And story number 2 comes from Elizabeth. Before I get started here, I need to give a content warning for mentions of abuse and substance use. Neither of them are graphic. My family has always been complicated, and my Uncle Dave was our poster child. Dave was a career alcoholic and addict. He was a master of his craft, truly dedicated to his job. He never took a day off and was always pushing the limits of human endurance, finding new and invented ways of getting twisted. As you might imagine, this could make him difficult to be around. What made it worse was he never bathed or washed his clothes, cut his tobacco blackened and coke bleached nails, or cleaned the house. You might think you know what a hoarder house looked like, but that image can't compare to the truly grotesque trash swamp that was Dave's hovel. He once bragged to me that while sleeping in his bed, he woke up to a wild possum eating the matted food out of his beard. Hanging out with Dave took an inhuman stench-enduring capacity, a superpower that not many people had. As you might imagine, he was a deeply lonely man. But I loved my Uncle Dave. He helped me in ways that I didn't truly realise while he was alive. Then, in dying, he saved my life and made me believe in an afterlife. Let me tell you a little bit more about me for context. My mother was an atheist. She raised me to believe that religion, including any beliefs about an afterlife, were a bullshit fantasy clung to by weak-minded fools. Any curiosity I ever expressed about God or the possibility of consciousness enduring beyond death earned a snide comment from my mom. So I wasn't primed to believe in ghosts. I did not merit the creepy kid jingle. In fact, I was taught to ignore all those weird, seemingly unexplainable things that happened to me, and to most people, to write them off as wish fulfillment and selective attention phenomena at best, insanity at worst. And insanity was something I was all too familiar with. I had inherited my family's complicated genes, scientifically known as the ones that cause autism, with some bipolar thrown in for flavour. I know admitting to this is going to make folks think that this ghost story is really just a rambling narrative of my psychosis. All I can say is, I know the difference between psychosis and what I experienced. There is no comparison between the two, but I guess you can judge for yourself. Anyway, growing up autistic, or a weird little nerd as it was called in the 80s, wasn't easy, and made even more difficult by the fact that I was skipped ahead in school, and so was a year or two younger than my peers. I was always trying to catch up, to fit in, but since I had fewer social skills than a particularly obtuse rock, I wasn't successful. So you might say I also knew what it was like to be lonely. I grew up into a cute baby-faced blonde with no self-esteem and a heap of PTSD, which made me a target of the worst kind of men. By the time I graduated high school at the age of 16, I was pretty fucked up. Unfortunately, the way I dealt with it was heroin. Before I was drinking age, I had already died from overdose and been brought back by my dealer, who thankfully had been a medic in Vietnam. I didn't see anything when I was on the other side, not even darkness, just an anesthetic blankness, which reinforced my belief that any notion of an afterlife was nothing but wish fulfillment. Because of my poor coping skills and poor choice in relationships, I graduated straight from college into prison on a delivery charge. Luckily, the judge took pity on a baby-faced, college-educated white girl, and I got the absolute minimum he could give me. I was released back into the world on a dreary February morning, and Uncle Dave was waiting for me. Knowing how much I had craved a good cup of coffee the whole time I was locked up, he'd brought me his camping espresso maker. We sat in a park in the pouring rain as he brewed me a cup. I did get my life a little more together after that, though I continued to struggle. I played in bands, and Dave would always come and see me play, though sometimes he'd end up getting kicked out of the bar before the end of our set because he'd smuggle in his own booze and start arguments with the regulars. I had to distance myself from him during that era because after I injured my back, he started getting me Percocets. I think it was his way of showing love and getting me to come and visit him more often, but it wasn't healthy for me. I may have quit heroin, but addiction's voice was still loud in my head. When I started writing books, Dave read them and begged me for my next book as soon as it was drafted. I never got the feeling that he was doing it out of obligation or to make me feel good. For one thing, Dave never did anything for those reasons. He only ever did anything because he wanted to. After I started landing publishing deals and could send him actual paperbacks instead of printed word processing documents, I'd come over and find a grubby and dog-eared copy of one of my novels beside his chair amongst a litter of cigarette butts and half-empty gallons of Monarch vodka. He'd read my books over and over. At some deep level, I think we understood each other. At some deep level, maybe we were a lot alike. Dave's life hit a decline at the same time mine did. He started tripping over the trash in his house and breaking ribs or getting stuck in the bathtub for days before being found. At that point, he was living in Seattle. My parents were 3 hours from him and I was in California, so all we could do was try and check in on him by phone and call in a well check if he went too long without answering. Eventually, though, the fire department said it was a hazard for them to rescue him anymore, and the city condemned his house. Luckily, since it was in the U District, the land it sat on was worth over $750,000. My parents helped him sell it and buy a house right by them so they could care for him. Meanwhile, my marriage was falling apart like a badly manufactured aeroplane. I was hiding in my stories and bad habits, writing 18 hours a day and drinking way too much. When my husband finally kicked me out of the house, my parents convinced me to bring my daughter and go and stay with them for a while. I did, even though staying there was difficult for reasons beyond just the fact that I was an adult and our culture has a stigma against that sort of thing. That house held dark memories for me, and my relationship with my parents was complicated at best. I ended up renovating a 10 by 12 foot picker's cabin on their property and living there, with a composting toilet and propane shower in a little attached outbuilding I built alongside it. It wasn't much, but it was better than living in my car. It also brought me closer to my Uncle Dave. He was too frail at that point to get me pills, so that was no longer an issue. I helped my mom take care of him. My daughter mowed his lawn and sat with him sometimes, getting to know him better. I lost my desire to drink as soon as I was out of my toxic marriage. But Dave continued to drink Bacardi 151 in heroic quantities and smoke cheap hand-rolled cigarettes. Despite his insistence he would never die, he passed away on a cold January afternoon just before the start of the pandemic. I was with him most of the day he died, but he waited to go until I'd left to pick my daughter up from school. My parents were with him, though. He wasn't alone when he left. Dave had been terrified to die. I remember going to his house the day after he passed away, and the energy in there was like live wires on my skin. It was such an alien feeling. I don't know how to explain it except to say that I'd never been so sure that a feeling was coming from outside my body. That was my first experience with ghosts, or whatever you would call them. I sang to him and scrubbed his kitchen floor, and I could feel him calm down. The weird energy in the house gradually smoothed out. I don't know exactly what he was going through, but I think he was glad someone was there with him. Dave left his house to my daughter in his will, but she, who has always been a lot more sensitive than me, wouldn't set foot in the place. My daughter, unlike me, does merit the creepy kid jingle. She was the sort of child who had chattered to empty corners as a toddler, and when she got older, regularly wrote letters to Basement Man, an elderly fellow who lived in my parents' creepy basement, asking him not to hurt her or the pets. I, on the other hand, was anxious to live in a real house again. Looking back on it, I must have been off my gob, but I stayed the night in Dave's house only 2 days after he died, in the bed that he died in. It was a different mattress, at least. That night, I woke up with a jolt. The smell of my uncle was suddenly overwhelming, swimming around my head in a pungent cloud. My ears rang. Someone was there, looming over me. My dog, who always sleeps beside my bed, sat up and stared at the dark form, panting loudly. I should have talked to my uncle, told him it was okay. But all I could do was cling to a scrap of sanity as I was buffeted by hurricane-force terror. Eventually, I made my body uncurl and leapt out of bed to turn on the light. The dark form beside my bed melted away, and the ringing in my ears dissipated. I buried my face in my dog's neck for a while, then turned on every light in the house and read a romance novel until I finally fell back asleep around dawn. Over the following weeks, I cleaned the house and painted the walls, aired it out, and burned sage and incense. After a while, my daughter felt comfortable living there, but strange things continued to happen. Sometimes we could smell Dave walk into the room and feel his presence. Objects would disappear and then turn up in odd places. Places we were 100% positive that we didn't put them. Things fell off countertops and shelves when we were both out of the room, startling us with bumps and crashes. One night my Auntie Susan came to visit. As we sat at the dining table talking about Dave, the lights in my bedroom, his old bedroom, started to flicker. They'd never done that before and haven't done it since. It may be one of those you had to be there things, but when it happened, we all looked at each other. We all knew it was him. Sure, after the fact, I tried to explain it away and rationalise it as just lights flickering, but I can't forget the certainty I felt at the time. Then there was the time I was laying on the couch and a ghost punched me in the face. I can't explain how it felt except to say that it felt exactly like being punched in the face, but without pain. I sat up screaming, and my daughter came running in. In my shock, I told her what had happened. I probably should have told her a spider had crawled onto my nose or something, but she was accustomed enough at that point to Dave's ghost behaviour that it didn't terrify her any more than usual. When I tell people this story, they always think that Dave was angry about something, but honestly, I think it was just his way of getting our attention. I don't think the afterlife has been any easier for him than life was. My agnostic world continued to dissolve around me. Weird synchronicities kept happening. Like one day at the gym, I got on an elliptical in front of ancient aliens, and they mentioned a man named Ian Stevenson, who had scientifically studied children who remember past lives. Normally, I would have thought this was just the bullshit ramblings of conspiracy theorists, but for some reason, I looked him up. What I found cracked my worldview straight down the middle. Ian Stevenson was actually a respected scientist, and sober, professional people could not easily explain away his data. The next few months, I fell deep into a rabbit hole, trying to sort out what was truly bullshit from what might actually be true. It turns out that the universe was way less straightforward than I had always believed it to be. Though maybe if I'd paid more attention in my quantum physics classes, I wouldn't have been so surprised. Another thing I discovered in my rabbit hole was that there have been well-designed, triple-blind studies that indicate that some mediums can give information with an accuracy much better than can be accounted for by chance. One day I was driving to work, mulling all this over, and wondering if I should go to a medium and try and make contact with my Uncle Dave. I was curious, and I wanted to see what happened. It's one thing to read studies and hear anecdotes, but another thing entirely to experience something firsthand. I mean, all my life, I'd had credible people tell me stories of paranormal things that they had seen, but I hadn't really believed them until it happened to me. With regard to a medium, I had no idea where to start, though. Some mediums might be the real thing, but a lot of them were as genuine as Kim Kardashian's butt. Everything I'd been reading made me leery. You couldn't just look up mediums on the internet like they were plumbers. The best way to find them was through word of mouth, but I didn't hang out with that crowd. I was working at that point as a visitation supervisor. My job that day was with a new client, and as the kid played with stuffed animals on the floor, the mom and I got to talking. She ended up mentioning, out of the blue, no prompting on my end whatsoever, that she had recently seen a medium to try and communicate with her deceased sister. I felt someone had injected liquid nitrogen into my veins. When I could finally catch my breath, I asked her for the medium's info. The next day, I looked her up. Her website wasn't too bad. There was some New Age buzzwords, of course, but no mention of a Native American spirit guide or promises to align my soul with the prosperity frequency for 20 low payments of $399.95. She offered 2-minute video recorded readings for $5, which seemed like a modest enough investment. I sent her an email from an account I never use and set up a brand new Venmo to pay her. She would have had a very difficult time gleaning any personal information from either account. Even if she were the sort of person who could afford to do hours of research for a $5 payment, I guess just for the joy of fucking with people, I didn't really talk about this stuff online or anywhere else at the time. I was still playing it pretty close to my chest. A couple of days later, I got an email with the video reading attached. The medium started out by saying that she got the impression I was going through a transition period trying to get back on my feet. I'm sensing a D name. Dave. David. The medium said David was watching over me. Admittedly, she did go on to say that it was probably the Archangel David or some crap, and a lot of the other stuff she said was vague, but still. What were the chances of her coming up with his name? It sent a chill down my spine. I know this story isn't going to convince any skeptics. Like I said, with this sort of thing, you really have to experience it for yourself in order to truly believe. But these experiences have completely changed my life. I now have a dedicated spiritual and meditation practice, which has helped me to start dealing with a lot of my trauma, anxiety, and bad coping skills. My Uncle Dave doesn't come around as much as he used to, but writing this has caused him to visit. I've been feeling his presence and been having weird dreams about him the last couple of days, and my daughter has too. He also left me a chunk of cash when he died, and I was able to buy myself a little cottage by the sea. My daughter is in college, so I moved here 5 hours from her, so she could rent out my room and start her adult life. So we don't see each other every day anymore. And I didn't tell her I was writing this or that I'd been feeling Dave around again. But she just now called me to tell me that she smelled his awful cigarettes again today when she came home from work. Something that hasn't happened in a long time. I know it's hard to lose people, but please know that they know when we're thinking about them. They still exist and they still love us. Dave, I really didn't get the chance to tell you how much I appreciate the nice things you did for me. I guess it also might be kind of fucked up to say that you changed my life for the better by dying, but effectively that is what happened. I've had a lot of senseless and painful things happen in my life. Knowing that this world isn't all there is has helped me a lot and made my existence a lot more meaningful. You did that for me. Elizabeth, your story is wonderful. I mean, it's awful. I'm really sorry that you had to go through all of the things that you had to go through. And addiction is no joke. Addiction is hard and destroys people and families and all of those things, as you well know. And I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. But I'm also really glad that you've come out the other side. And I know that you said that Dave was obviously a very lonely man. And it sounds like he was a very lonely man, and also sounds like you and him had a really deep connection, which, you know, judging by what you've said, was probably the deepest connection that he had in his life, you know? And I think him showing an interest in things like your books, etc., probably is demonstrative of the fact that he was really proud of you. And I totally understand what you mean by him only doing things because he would want to do them. You know, I've got somebody in my life like that where they will never say things to placate you or try and make you feel better. They will only say things that they mean and only do things that they want to do. And like I said, it sounds like he was probably really proud of you and your daughter. Although hearing about your daughter writing letters to the basement man to not hurt her or the pets, that's a no from me. Yeah, so I'd be like, you knock that off or I'm putting you up for adoption. Okay, I do think it's amazing that he has found a way to come back and see not only you and look out for you and let you know that he's there, but also other people have experienced this too. Like your daughter has experienced it. Your aunt has experienced it. You had that experience with the medium, which, like you said, you know, some of the stuff was vague and, you know, ambiguous and whatever. But actually her coming back to you and saying, you know, there's a man called Dave that is watching over you, regardless of the Archangel David, whatever. But her saying there's a man called Dave that's watching over you, like, that's powerful stuff. And I can only imagine that him having that connection with you and your daughter in real life, of course he'd want to come back and see if you're okay and punch you in the face while you're lying on the sofa, which we could all do without, Dave. Thank you very much. But, you know, there seems to be a lot of attention needing behavior, like, look at me, I'm here for you, I haven't gone anywhere. And that's, you know, it's a very powerful connection you guys obviously have, that is, it has transcended the real world and into the afterlife. Like I said, Elizabeth, I'm very glad that you have been able to find a way to work through all of your trauma and strife and PTSD and all of those awful things. I'm glad for you. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Thank you to Samantha and Elizabeth for sending in your stories. Remember, the last story came from February the 3rd, 2024. And if you would like to send in your story, you can do so by emailing it to reallifeghoststoriespodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out the website, reallifeghoststoriespodcast.com. And if you are desperate for some extra content, you can subscribe to the Patreon. That is patreon.com/reallifeghoststories, where for $5 a month or $2 a month, you get access to heaps of extra content, as well as every single main and mini episode completely ad-free. And on that note, I shall see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.